Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And welcome to the Chronicles of Nannia, a nanny resource podcast made for nannies by me, a nanny. I am your host, Martha Reddick, and this week on the podcast, I'm actually very, very excited for this week. We are talking about the Story Pirates. This is actually another podcast that was presented to me by a former guest of the show, Leah Friars. She told me, Martha, you've got to listen to this podcast with your kids. They're going to love it. And so I started listening to it and I fell in love and I reached out and the wonderful artistic director, Lee Overtree, got back to me and he's our guest today. Hello, Lee.
Hey, Martha.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We are so excited to have you. I actually emailed Leah this morning and was like, I'm talking to Lee today. And she was like, oh my gosh. We had a little fangirl moment because all of our nanny kids really, really, really love your show.
Oh, that's so awesome. Thank you so much for listening and for spreading the word around. And thanks to Leah too for spreading the word to you.
Yeah, I will tell her. Well, you probably just did. She will listen to this for sure. Well, before we get kind of into more of the meat, let's hear a little bit of background about the Story Pirates and about you and your journey with the Story Pirates. So first off, what are the Story Pirates?
Yeah, so Story Pirates is an educational theater and media company. We're based in New York and Los Angeles, and the programming we're most known for is going into schools, doing creative writing workshops with kids, usually K through fifth grade, and then taking those stories and giving them to professional actors, musicians, comedians, and turning them into a performance for the kids who wrote them to see. So, you know, the
wonderful.
Yeah, the typical Story Pirates experience is, you know, an auditorium full of 500 fourth graders, and we come out and we say, this next story is written by you, and we point to, you know, a kid in the audience, and the crowd goes wild, and then we perform their story for them, and hopefully instill a love of learning, a love of writing, a love of creativity, and all that jazz.
Yeah, that's so wonderful. I know because my background is in English, secondary English education. And something that we talked about a lot in my classes leading up to my teaching for a year is that a lot of the messages that we're sending to our students by the choices of what we're choosing to read in the classroom is that things published right now are not worth reading. And so that's sending this message of why should I even write anything? Because it's not going to be literarily valid for 50 years.
Wow.
And so something that I love about what you all do is that you're saying you wrote this right now and it is a valid story that we can share, we can all experience it together in this really fun, creative way. And that there's value in creating. And I think starting that from an elementary level, because I will tell you from what I have seen by high school and a lot of kids, that idea dies.
Yeah.
And it's so sad. And so I love the work that you guys are doing.
That's really awesome. I've never heard about like the high school educational perspective.
Yeah.
I'm more familiar with elementary school, but it's interesting to see like hear a perspective on how what we do can sort of carry on into later life like that.
Yeah, exactly. Because a lot of, if you look at the top 50 books that are taught in high schools, I think the most recent one was published in the 80s. So yeah. It's like, what are we sending? You know, what message are we sending? Is there nothing that has been written in the last 40, coming up on 50 years that's worth studying?
Yeah.
So later in life, that all pays off, which is great. But for nannies, a lot of times we're working with the other end of that, which is this unbridled, raw creativity that just runs wild all day. I mean, we just watch kids play pretend all day and get sucked into it ourselves. And that's something that I absolutely love about being a nanny, because I'm also an actress. And so this idea of just playing pretend literally all day is so wonderful. And so can you speak a little bit about the podcast aspect? Because for those listeners who aren't in New York or LA and can't necessarily catch a live show right away, the way to interact with you all is through the podcast.
Yeah. So, the podcast is a big part of what we're doing right now. In addition to national touring, so you should go to our website and see where we're touring, because we're sort of all over the country all the time, it feels like.
Yeah.
But the podcast is a big thing. You know, it's free, it's on iTunes, and it's some of our favorite stories that we've recorded over the years as radio plays. So I think of our style as like Schoolhouse Rock meets Monty Python.
Uh-huh. That's a very good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I think kids, what they write as, I just personally think kids have better ideas than adults. And I think they're funnier. I think they're more moving. I think they're more interesting. And so we take those stories and those ideas and we turn them into these radio plays. And on the podcast, you get to hear sort of the original story that the author sent in to us. And then you get to hear our adaptation of it, which is really, I think of it as a collaboration between the kid author and these adult artists. And we make something new together. And that's sort of what our adaptation is. And then I interview the author to sort of see what they thought about our performance, and to sort of like check in on their lives and see what it's like to be a kid wherever they are and find out what's going on.
Right. Yeah. That's so wonderful. So once you, often I have heard on the podcast that you say that the story was submitted a long time ago, and then you just said that you choose some of your favorites for the podcast. So how does that process work? How does a child's story get chosen for the podcast?
So the podcast, that's sort of like a fluke of the strange way that we started doing radio plays, which is that we had a radio show on Sirius XM for about 5 years. And we would do a monthly show where we would give a theme, like write a story about a brand new holiday, or write a story about presidential fan fiction. And kids would send us stories. We'd choose stories to perform on the radio, and we'd perform them live. And then we sort of captured all that. And now we've been like repackaging that material for the podcast, because not everybody has Sirius XM. It's a subscription service.
Right.
And we want these stories to sort of get out into the world. So, you know, in 5 years of being on SiriusXM, we've created hundreds and hundreds of stories. So right now, the form of the podcast is about like choosing sort of our favorites from over the years and going back and repackaging them into this podcast. And so then I'm like, I find myself contacting authors years later and being like, hey, we recorded the story that you wrote in 2014. Can I interview you about it now?
Yeah.
And so that's why the kids are often older on the pod than they were when they wrote the story.
Which, yes, that makes total sense. And I think actually it's sometimes really nice because they're older, they have more vocabulary to express things, which
and
were
perspective.
Yes. Yes. And perspective.
Which is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. That is, that's so interesting.
But it is always surprising to me and interesting that, like, when I do get in touch with these kids, often years later, they know exactly what their story was. They remember the experience so clearly. They're excited to talk to me about it. It makes me feel like taking their ideas and, you know, sort of like shouting to the world that they have value, like, has a impact on these kids. And that's something I'm really proud of.
Yes, I would think that was my a poem of mine won when I was in sixth grade, and I still very much remember it. It got printed on a t-shirt. It was a very big deal.
A poem on a t-shirt is a huge deal.
Yeah, it was about water pollution.
Oh my gosh. Do you remember the name of it?
I am a little orange fish, but
yes.
It had kind of a twist ending because the fish was dead all along.
Ugh.
It was speaking from heaven.
Oh no.
I know.
It's like the sixth sense.
It was, yes. You went through a whole journey by the end of the t-shirt.
Oh my God. That's
running
amazing.
Down the spine of the t-shirt.
I love that.
Yeah, but it does. There is a lot of value. I mean, even nannying, when I have taken an idea that a kid has and given it legs, that just that little gesture, for example, recently one of the kids that I nanny is super into Pokemon, and we went to the dollar store to like pick out one thing. They each got to pick out one thing, and he picked out a big trifold poster board thing. And he was like, I want to make a Pokemon gym on here. And so just honoring that and giving him the supplies and then looking up the Pokemon on my phone so that he would have a visual, and the end product was so cool. And he like proudly displays it in his room now. And so even just, you know, to bring it back to nannying, just these little ways that we can value the creativity that's happening in front of us instead of writing it off or saying that's too difficult, I think is really worth paying attention to, of where does this kid's creativity going right now, and how can I help it go further?
Right. It's, I bet, like, as an actor, your impulses in that arena are helpful in terms of facilitating creativity with kids, because you're used to sort of seeing what someone gives you, saying yes to that, and then adding to it, right?
Yes, very, very much. And with kids, it is so fun because they're not playing by the same set of rules as adults. And by throwing out that rule book, it just opens up such a fun expanse of territory.
Yeah, they're working without a filter.
Yeah.
Which is the most valuable thing you can have as a creative artist.
Right, right. And encouraging that is just... It's one of the most rewarding things I do day to day. And through your podcast, we've actually started writing stories. So we listen to it, I would say maybe almost every day, especially in the car.
Yes.
Because I just can't answer a bunch of questions while I'm driving in Chicago traffic. And so I often put on something to try to not have a bombardment of questions while I'm driving. And and your podcast is one of our go-tos. And so because they've been listening to this, and especially the interview part afterwards where you talk to the kids.
Yeah.
The older kid is really interested in that part. The younger one kind of gets bored, but he's three, and that's okay. but the older one really listens to that.
That's cool.
To how you interview the kid and what kinds of questions you're asking and how the kid responds and what you do with that.
Yeah, I always wonder how kids are responding to the interview section. So that's really nice to hear.
Yeah, because there's also learning how to socially interact in that. And you do it in such a nice way of you – it's not, you're not talking down to the kids in any way. You're talking to them like artists. And
so nice of you to say.
Yeah, and really valuing their answers. And so because of that, I think so often kids get talked to like kids with a negative connotation on the word kids. Mm-hmm. Like what they have to say is less valuable. And so just by speaking to them and really listening to what they're saying, just that act alone can do so much with self-confidence and then also helping them creatively.
That's so cool to hear. Yeah, I do really try to speak to them. Treat them as I would want to be treated. And that means, you know, because I think they have something that I don't have anymore and I want to know what it is.
Yeah, that's a great way to think of it. For those days that as a nanny, you're feeling frustrated, I think remembering that piece of that the kids actually do have something that we lost as adults.
Right.
In the hustle and bustle and maybe coming at it as can I see that more clearly through interacting with this kid
absolutely.
Is a worthwhile way to approach playtime. Yeah. Because it can certainly be exhausting. I don't know in those interviews if you come out a little bit exhausted because it is, you do have to kind of in the same way that you can make your eyes go kind of hazy and take in everything at once. You kind of have to make your brain do that to get in that space.
And yeah. I mean,
it's a lot of energy.
It's a lot of energy. And I think my job is easy because I'm the fun guy that gets to like show up and be crazy. And then I get to walk away. And
right.
Parents can't do that, and nannies can't do that. And you know, I've babysat before a long time ago, and I've done a fair amount of teaching. And I'm not a superhuman, you know. Like I can't.
Yeah.
So I think my job is much easier. I do get tired, but the knowledge that I can just walk away, as like, and treat this as like my art and not a responsibility is huge to me being able to muster the energy to like, you know, to put it out there.
Yeah. And that's, maybe for nannies, if you set like a time of like creativity time, mm-hmm. where you're going to be like 110% invested in the creative life of the kids for that amount of time. And then after that transition to something a little less tiresome with that particular muscle.
Yeah, like it's
be a good idea.
Yeah, like it's trying to get out of the mindset of every moment as survival mode, which is so easy to fall into.
Yeah.
Just in life in general, but especially spending time with kids, like you're like constantly, at least for me, I'm constantly aware of like preserving as much energy as possible so that I can survive.
Right.
But when you have a moment or setting time to be like, now I'm going to approach what I'm doing with this kid as a collaboration. And that's another important piece of it. It's like, it is not 100% just for the kid.
Right.
Those moments of artistry, like those moments are about you too. And it's about what happens in the space between these two people. And maybe that makes it easier to spend the energy as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Taking the energy from the kid and then giving it back. Getting that kind of cycle going is probably a really good way to look at it. When you were speaking before, you said that you see the radio plays as a aspect of that collaboration, but the child is not in the room as you're making the radio plays, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, we get the story, which oftentimes are made in a creative writing workshop.
Okay.
So that's like story pirates and kids interacting. But yeah, when we create it, you know, we'll take the story the kid wrote and then we'll sort of like make it. And then we want to like show it to them.
Right. Without like giving away any secrets, are there certain prompts that you guys have in those creative writing workshops, or are you like up on your feet more and then you write, or do you start from a writing place and then it obviously gets up on the actor's feet later? But
yeah,
how active are the kids?
I think we approach it as we approach all of our teaching, whether we're teaching creative writing or we're teaching expository essays, which we do, or we're teaching even more fine-tuned grammatical things like quotation placement or whatever. We approach it all from a mindset of let's create a story in the classroom that the kids can become involved in and can affect the narrative. So, you know, which is some people would recognize that description as something called process drama. Which is a great, great way to teach, but we're not exactly doing that all the time, but we do treat everything as a story because humans learn through stories and they want to engage with stories. They want to be able to affect the narrative. And so rather than coming at it from a sense of like, we're experts and you are learning things from us, it is a perspective of we're going to tell a story and you can become involved in the story. And the story is about, maybe the story is about sentence structure, or the story is about story structure or character development. And then next thing you know, you're learning stuff but it didn't feel like it.
Yeah. That's so wonderful. 'Cause yeah, I do know that a lot of nannies are also homework helpers or tutors, things like that. So, and I know sometimes it can feel like pulling teeth when it comes down to homework time. So adding that aspect of play even in that arena, I think is helpful if you can figure out how to do it.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's like easier for us, right? Because it's not like we're, you know, running state testing or like making sure the math homework gets done. It's but there are aspects of storytelling and play, like you said, that are, I think it's important to all learning, and I think it's easily forgotten.
Yes, I think that is very true. So during that interview part, so the kids submit, you read their exact words, which I love hearing weird sentence structure read aloud. I love that you guys do present the source material exactly as the child wrote it. And then you do this radio play. So when you record that radio play, just for my own brain, how do you do it? Are you in a studio?
Yeah, we're in a studio. We have seven of us, and there's a couple hundred story pirates.
Yeah,
between the two
coasts.
Saw that
on the website. That's awesome.
Yeah, there's so many. So every show, there's like seven of us, like one piano player, and then six other actors, including myself, usually. And we sit around in a circle. We all have headphones on. We all have mics. And we all have scripts.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm usually have a computer that has sound effects on it.
Nice.
And we do it live. And I think the energy that you hear on the recording is a direct result of you have one shot to do this.
Yeah, I think that definitely comes through because I felt that. And I was wondering, yeah, if there was like an improvisational element to it. And if you have like a computer with sound effects, that makes sense that there probably is some room for alterations or.
Yeah. I mean, we use improv a lot in our process of building the stories.
Mm-hmm.
Usually by the time they get to performance, whether it's on stage or on the radio, they're pretty set.
Right.
But improv is 100% a tool we use in creating the material.
Yeah, and that comes through for sure. And then you interview the kids. And something that I love during that interview is that you often will spend time talking to them about where they're from, which is all over the country. And through that, at least the kids that I nanny have now heard about Montana and, you know, like even little things like that. And you always go out of your way to kind of ask what it's like where the kid is. Was that a conscious choice or something that came out naturally and then you liked it and you've kept it?
I love that you pick up on that because it's one of my favorite things. I just, I don't know. I think the first time I did it, I just did it because I was like trying to find something that kid is an expert in that I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, like that always feels like a good place to start with me. Anytime I'm talking to anybody, you know, like kid or adult, whether it's like social anxiety or anything else or something else, I'm just always asking them questions about themselves. And I want to know, and often that's like, where are you from? Like, what was it like growing up there? How'd you get into this? Is always interesting to me. And so I think I just naturally did it with kids when I started interviewing them. But it is nice that they're an expert in that, you know, and they,
yeah.
I can't say any better than they can what it's like to live where they live or what it's like there at all.
Yeah. And I think there's something so valuable in that, in this day and age where we can literally look up anything online, because there's one where you're asking asking three kids, actually, your latest episode, When I Lost My Dog and Took Home a Wolf.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's a favorite with the kids I nanny. And you ask about King Charles Spaniels and what they look like. And I grew up with King Charles Spaniels. And I was like, oh. You know, my first thought is like, oh, I'll just look up a picture. And I know as nannies, we do that a lot of just like, we'll just show you. And that is a great tool. But I also, your podcast is such a nice reminder of even looking up a King Charles Spaniel cannot replace a kid's view of what a King Charles Spaniel is. No one else has that point of view. Even Google doesn't have that kid's point of view on what a King Charles Spaniel is. And it's so valuable to human interaction to remember that. To remember that when you're talking to someone, they actually have something that literally no one else in the world has. And the kids that we nanny have something that literally no other kid has. So asking those follow-up questions of like, tell me more about that is so valuable.
I love that. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, because I do get in that like Google grind of like, let's just look it up.
It's the power of radio too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Forcing us to imagine what things look like. When you say like, when you, you know, when you even when you just reminded me about asking kids where they're from and what it's like there, I get all the images in my head that I made when I heard about them. Like I think about this kid in Texas riding his bike around on for rodeo day. I think about, you know, the different places around the country. It's cool how we're able to come up with that on our own. And it's cool to like help kids do that too in the age of, Google and the internet and stuff.
And I think it's a really valuable way to work around stereotypes. Because it is so easy to be like, well, you know, rodeo day, like, of course they have that in Texas. But yes, they have that in Texas, but there's also riding your bike around on the street, which I did in Tennessee as well. You know, like,
yeah,
things like that, of these little reminders that all of America is so similar and so different, all of the world. But
yeah, it is cool to remember that kids are the same everywhere, and they really are. Like, I've never been somewhere or met a kid that I was like, it's really different where you are.
Yeah.
I mean, I mostly talk to kids in America, but you know, all the ones I talk to, I'm always surprised at like how we're more similar than different.
Yes, very much. And I love that from, you know, the comfort of our car in Chicago, through your podcast, we do get to travel around, you know, a little bit and hear all these different perspectives. So I love that question. Thank you for asking it to every kid. So sometimes kids, you know, they are natural storytellers, but sometimes when you just say, tell me a story, they get really shy. A way that I work around that is a shared story. So I start the story once upon a time, and then I get to kind of a place, kind of like a Mad Lib of stories is how we start, and then we build towards the kids taking over more and more of the story. Do you have, like, in those interviews, that seems to be a little bit of your trend as well, of you start asking, I think, more questions, but as the kids take the reins, you hand them over. And let them kind of say whatever they want to say. Do you have any advice for nannies who aren't coming at it from an acting background? Because many nannies don't have acting backgrounds, of how to help foster that transition?
It's a hard question.
It is.
And I think about the amount of times that I've, you know, been talking to a parent and a kid, and the parent sort of like turns to their kid and is like, why don't you write a story for the Story Pirates? And the kid always sort of gets nervous and is like, shut up, mom, or whatever. And I'm like, why'd you put him on the spot like that? And I think that's sort of like the key, is so many times like adults feel like they're unintentionally like putting kids on the spot. to perform. And it's not about performance, really. It's not about, like, can you write it down and turn it in, or can you tell it? It's about the joy of doing it together.
Yes.
You know? It's not about, like, Dance Monkey.
Yeah.
You know? And oftentimes I wonder if parents are putting kids on the spot because of their own insecurities of themselves as storytellers.
Yeah.
And maybe a way around that is to put yourself on the spot and think of it as a collaboration and just start doing it without sort of labeling what it is, without putting a value on it. You know, like, you don't, as opposed to saying, like, and now we're going to tell a story, or now it's time for you to write a story. I mean, if your kid's motivated to do that, that's amazing, and you should.
Right, but if it comes from the kid, not from...
Yeah, but I think it's a different thing to be walking down the street and to, like, you see somebody, and that's sort of interesting, and you say, like, what do you think... What's the story behind that person, do you think?
Yeah.
Or where do you think he's going? Or, mm-hmm. or like, look at that building. What do you think happens inside that building?
Yeah.
I like to sort of spark imagination with kids the way that I spark it with myself, which is to look around, and it's human nature to start telling stories about the things that are around you.
Oh, that's wonderful. That was, you answered a very hard question very, very well. And I know
Thank you.
For, you're welcome. I know for nannies, a lot of times there's a lot of jokes in the nanny groups about, you know, we went for a walk and we saw 27 bugs, 3 sticks and 2 rocks. And now we're at the end of the driveway. But I think that's all really fertile ground for stories. So, you know, when the kid notices a bug, there's a story.
Totally.
What is that bug doing? Where are they
What's
going?
What's that guy's name? Does he have a family?
Yeah. Is he grumpy? Yeah,
I always laugh, like, I have this joke with a friend that whenever you go to the zoo, like, no matter where you are at the zoo, someone is always pointing at the animals and deciding, like, what the family makeup is. They're like, that's the baby, and that's the mommy, and that's the daddy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's telling stories, right?
Right, for sure.
And we can't help but do it. It's just happening.
Right. Yeah. But I agree with you of that, like, tell me a story, kid, is it just stops everything. Cold turkey.
Yeah, and it takes you out of the equation. And I do feel strongly that, like, we should be making them together.
Yeah. Oh, that's so wonderful. Well, those were most of my questions. Is there anything else about the Story Pirates that you'd like to say or anything you'd like to plug?
Well, I do have some exciting news, which Ooh. Is that Story Pirates is coming out with our first book.
Oh my gosh, that is exciting. When is
Yeah,
that?
It's not going to be on for a year.
Okay. But yeah, books but take it, time.
They take time, but what we've done for the book is I went out to a bunch of kids and asked them to send in basically what we call a spark, so an idea spark for a story. So we asked them to give us the name of a character and a problem that the character is having.
Great.
And then how do they get out of that problem? And we then chose one from a kid named Vince in Memphis, Tennessee.
Nice.
And gave Vince's spark idea to a New York Times bestselling author who's turning it into a novel.
Oh, wow.
So full middle grade novel. And then the second half of the book is going to be this called the Story Creation Zone, which is going to be about helping kids write their own stories.
That's so awesome. So in 2018.
Yeah, it's called Stuck in the Stone Age. It's about two scientists that get stuck back in time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
That
it's gonna be it's awesome.
I'm super excited for that. Wonderful. And then if anyone wants more information about the Story Pirates, if a parent is listening to this and is like, oh, I want them to come to my kid's school, how
Yeah.
do they do that?
You can go to storypirates.com and find out where we're performing all over the country. We have all our tour dates up there.
Great.
You can also find links to our podcast on the website, as
Wonderful.
well as you can just go and wherever you listen to podcasts and iTunes or Stitcher or whatever, you can find our podcast. It's free.
Yes.
And yeah, and then also I should mention, Story Pirates, part of what we do is bring programs into Title I schools in
Great.
all across the country. And to do that, we have an annual benefit, and we have a big benefit show coming up in New York and Los Angeles with celebrity special guests. You can find out information about
Ooh.
that on the website, but you can also just donate there if you're interested in helping bring these kinds of programs to kids who otherwise would not be able to afford them.
Wonderful. When is the benefit or are the benefits if they're different days?
The New York benefit is May 13th, and the Los Angeles benefit is June 4th. And they're both going to be awesome shows with singing and dancing, celebrity guests. But you can also go to Story Pirates online and donate there to help bring these programs to these schools that really deserve them.
Wonderful. Yeah, I will be doing that later today. Awesome. Well, we end every episode with a fun story or a quote from a nanny kid. And I brought one because it was too perfect not to bring.
Awesome.
So I was talking to my nanny kids about the fact that I was going to be talking to you today. And I said, I'm going to be interviewing Lee Overtree from the Story Pirates. What should I ask him? And the younger of the two said, ask him how to play the one about Molly, which is the when I lost my dog and Tacoma Wolf story. The latest episode up and the first one that we listened to. And I said, well, I was like, well, we know how to play that one. I was like, we've played it before. And he said, well, then can you play it?
Cut
And
to the chase, Martha.
I was like, all right, well, you're not gonna do my homework for me, I guess. Fine.
That's amazing. How cool for those kids in, were they in Montana? I can't remember.
I think they were, yeah.
Somewhere like that. How cool for those kids that there's like another kid in Chicago who's like obsessed with their
I
dog.
know, right? Yep. He really is.
So
But
funny.
yeah, it was so cute. I was like, that was very well played because he just wanted to listen to the story. So,
That's awesome.
yeah, well, thank you so much, Lee. This was
My pleasure.
wonderful.
Thanks for having me. And hello to all the nannies out there. Keep fighting the good fight. And good work.
Thanks so much, and thank you for listening. See you next
All right.
week. The Chronicles of Nanny is produced by Martha Reddick and Logan Nielsen. Artwork and logo by Noni Amadon. Theme music by Brad Kemp. Find him at secondbedroomstudio.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chronicles of Nania and on Twitter at Nania Podcast. To contact us, email chroniclesofnania@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.